You recognize that sound, that voice, that's the tuba. It can only be the tuba. And that's being noodled by a tuba virtuoso, Arnold Jacobs, the principal tuba, the only one of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. He's been a teacher of brass instruments. The students have come from all over the world. And as Arnold is noodling, seated around the big studio, are the tuba virtuoso. Harvey Phillips is a master of this instrument, teaching at Indiana University in Bloomington. And he's known as the impresario of the tuba. And he organized big events across the country, like Tuba Christmas. And more about Harvey and Arnold to go along. And Fritz Kainzig is here. He's the principal tuba of the Grand Park Symphony, teaches at the University of Illinois Circle Campus. And Richard Fraser, who was a guest before, a member moving forward, the Chicago Chamber Brass. We've got a recital coming up tomorrow night. And so, as we hear Arnold Jacobs noodling, I hear him pressing those valves. Can't get him away from the tuba. Arnold, the big question is, you're the dean of tuba players. You and Harvey are here, and the two younger players are here, Richard Fraser and Fritz Kainzig. I was thinking, somehow we don't associate the tuba with symphonic music. There's a repertoire of that, isn't there?
I wish more people did. in other words, the violinists, of course, are the most prominent in there. But we tuba players, thanks to Harvey and friends of his, we're finding our place in the sun. And we are important on the bottom. Somewhere there has to be a bottom to the brass section, and that's me.
And so you were way back, well, it was at Curtis Institute.
Well, you have a good memory, or somebody must, because I started there about 1930, and I think I was there for about 6.5 years. It seems a long time to me even now. God, I've been with the Chicago Symphony for 43 years. I was in the Pittsburgh Orchestra for 5 years before that, Indianapolis 2 years before that, and all those years at the Curtis Institute.
Well, we always say tuba, and at least the Harvey Phillips. You know, Harvey is one of the, I know, he and his good friend Alec Weiler, that marvelous American composer, have responsible for much that is original in American music, too. So there is a tuba repertory, isn't there, Harvey?
Oh, we're very proud of what we're achieving in recent years. First of all, you have to realize that the tuba did not evolve until 1835. So we lost out, or the composers Bach and Handel and Mozart and Beethoven and others of that vintage lost out because they didn't have a tuba to write for. And the tuba, we're very proud to say, is one of the two solo voices of the symphony orchestra, the other being the harp. And since 1835, when the tuba was immediately brought into the symphony, it's been one of the grand instruments of the brass and wind family. Unfortunately, we didn't get a concerto until 1954.
Let me ask you why. Why no tuba till 1835? Was there some sort of new invention that took place with the tuba?
Yes, the valve had to be invented before we could have a chromatic bass instrument.
And so from then on, but there was no tuba concerto for 130 years or so.
Well, you see, in the 19th century, most of the composers were so taken with writing large, grand orchestral pieces, and there were really very few chamber works for either winds or brass written in the 19th century, and very little solo literature for winds or brass.
Yeah. I was thinking, Fritz, you and Richard Fraser, I imagine the names of Arnold Jacobs and Harvey Phillips mean a great deal to you.
Oh, absolutely. I've studied with Mr. Jacobs for 15 or 20 years now. He was one of my heroes growing up, listening to the Chicago Symphony recordings of Fritz Reiner. But boy, what a sound. And then, of course, once I started getting very interested in the tuba, to listen to the solo records that came out, Harvey Phillips had a lot of the early recordings responsible for a lot of the new repertoire that's happened for our instrument, solo repertoire, since that 1954 concerto.
Yes, I'm thinking, Richard Fraser, I know you helped arrange this get-together here, and you have this concert tomorrow night we'll talk about. But chamber brass, I'm thinking, again, just as you and Fritz are contemporaries, the two guys seated with you here are really key figures in the, you know, Harvey Phillips and Arnold Jacobs, key figures in the whole matter of the tuba and symphonic music.
Indeed, it's an honor to be here in their presence. And these two men have defined the word tuba in sound to our generation.
Now, what has it preceded, the tuba? That was an instrument with a quite fascinating name of serpent. What's a serpent?
Well, a serpent is was a type of instrument that was developed as sort of the bass instrument of the shawm or cornet, an instrument that, oddly enough, it was like a flute in that it had finger holes, but it was played with a mouthpiece like a trumpet mouthpiece, and the bass instrument was so long that the player couldn't reach all the finger holes, and so they had to curl it up in a rather serpentine fashion, and it was called the serpent, even in sophisticated circles. And we have some serpent music today.
Serpent music?
Yes, these things are still around.
What are we going to hear now?
This is a piece from the Royal Fireworks Music. It's actually been arranged for this group, the London Serpent Trio. This is a little march.
Hearing the serpent, we've got to ask our two virtuosi here, Arnold Jacobs and Harvey Phillips. Did you guys ever play the serpent?
I tried.
Yeah.
I gave a lesson to a young man who was a bassoon player, and he was starting to learn the serpent. He bought a kit and made it himself. And with him fingering and my handling the mouthpiece, we made some music. But when I had to finger it, I just couldn't make it. And I really didn't much care for the sound either. I was just telling Harvey, we tried the awful quiet too, and the only note I liked was when everything was closed, it went downhill. As you opened the valves, it sounded like a water key opening up on a tuba. No, I just didn't have the patience to go back 200 years.
You know, when I think of the tuba, my first reaction, kid, you know, I don't associate with symphony music. I think of circus music, the tuba. And, of course, Harvey Phillips' own saga. He ran off to join the circus.
Well, I didn't exactly run off. I mean, everyone knew where I was going. But it was a great opportunity for me because in those days, the circus carried a band. And, of course, the great bandmaster, Merle Evans, was supreme in the circus world. And at that time, we would play every kind of music you could imagine. We'd play the Ride of the Valkyries to bring the flying act out, and we'd play some ascending music to get them up on the wire. We'd play a Strauss waltz, and we'd play a jazz number for the clowns to do a walk around. And it was great training for me to do freelance work later on in New York, where you had to cope with every kind of music.
But you came from a small town in Missouri, and you were 15.
That's right.
When you ran off to join the circus. I like that.
Yes.
Well, incidentally, the tuba, what led you to tuba, Arnold and you, Harvey, and we'll come to Richard and Fritz later.
So many of us were put on it by bandmasters. I was a trombone player, and I lost my trombone while traveling in the country. It fell off the side of the running board of an old Hudson, I think it was a 29 touring car, and disappeared. When I got back to school in Santa Monica at Washington Junior High, bandmaster said, "We don't have another trombone to loan you, but we have a brand new King sousaphone." I tried it, and I was an instant success. They made me first tuba of the band, you know, and I've been stuck with it ever since.
So losing a trombone out of a Hudson, 1925 Hudson, led you to be the tuba virtuoso. So we think, now you two younger players, Fritz and Richard, what led you to tuba? It's interesting.
Well, I guess the tuba kind of picked me, I always like to say, because I didn't really choose it per se. I'd played piano for a number of years, and then I took general music in seventh grade, and the band director was impressed with how much I seemed to do in music, so he asked me, when they needed a tuba player the next year, I asked his daughter who might be a good one to get to play in the band, and she suggested me, and he said, well, that seems pretty good. He did all right in the general music class, and when he asked me to play, I thought, well, it's as good as any other instrument, and his daughter's kind of cute, so I dated his daughter for a year, and still date the tuba now, 20 years later.
And you and the tuba, Richard Brazier.
Well, like everyone else, I was sort of impressed into the service of the tuba. I didn't play a band instrument, and I was going to a country school in Texas, and I played the steel guitar and the harmonica, and then I transferred to a bigger high school. They had, at least 300 people in this high school, and they had a band program that's fantastic. Over 100 people were in the band, and since there were no steel guitar or harmonica parts in the band, I was given the tuba.
One of the popular songs I heard as a kid. Now, when was that popular? Yuba plays the tuba. When you was that in the 30s? It was the 30s.
In the 30s.
And so what do you think? Later on, we'll talk about the history of the tuba, what it means to different countries and different societies. But what about yuba plays Harvey back in the 30s?
Well, I think it was a grand song. It was a lot of fun to play and a lot of fun to hear. And that's one of the characteristics of our instrument that we want very much to share with the general public. It's a challenge. Our range of the tuba encompasses over half the piano keyboard. It's a grand singing voice. And to hear William Bell, for example, with Leopold Stokowski perform this with the New York Philharmonic is quite a treat.
But before we hear that, the William Bell, is another yuba tuba, Richard?
Well, I ran across a friend of mine, Rich Marco. He has, Rich Studs. He has a show on, and he found the original recording of Yuba Plays the Rumba on the Tuba with Joe Tarto doing it. And so we thought we'd listen to that and then listen to another version by William Bell that was done with Stokowski and the New York Philharmonic. A couple of yubas.
To a piece of drum, but this is news to me. I understand her. He's an overnight success, he's in demand. Why I never could have guessed. Well, he found a big day tuba, then he bumped his way to Cuba, and the rest is history. Down in Havana, there's a funny looking booba. He plays the rumba on the tuba down in Cuba. Oh, when he sapple fell an apple, but the chap would rather grapple with his oompa, oompa, oompa. They prefer it to a boopa, doopa, doopa. They love the rumba on the tuba down in Cuba. It doesn't take them very long to get a tumble, for all the rumba lovers go into their rumble. Oh, how I'd like to be his double, for without a bit of trouble, with his oompa, 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 he can knock 11 ladies for a looper. They love the rumba on the tuba down in Cuba. He's not a greenhorn, he blows a mean horn, a musty mean horn. Oh, he's a whiz. Why, all the what man I love this funny looking booba who plays the rumba on the tuba down in Cuba. I can't believe it, but they tell us every penis man is jealous of his oompa oompa oompa. They prefer it to a booba doopa doopa. They love the rumba on the tuba down in Cuba. They love his oompa 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 oompa.
Playing the tuba, and we'll take a little break here. We're seated with Colonel Jacobs, who's the principal tuba player at the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, and one of the most highly respected teachers around and about, and Harvey Phillips, equally so, teaching the tuba at Indiana University in Bloomington. And I can't get over there leaving home to join the circus at 50. and Fritz Kainzig, who is the principal tuba at the Grant Park Orchestra and teaches University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana. And Richard Frazier, who, by the way, is offering a concert tomorrow night at Elm. It's a tuba concert. Yeah. It's called the Effervescent Tuba, the concert.
Yes, the Effervescent Tuba.
And this is at Elmhurst College at 8 tomorrow night. And what will you play?
Oh, we're going to do a little bit of everything, a little Beethoven and Mozart songs, because the tuba is indeed such a singing instrument. It's just that we feel very comfortable playing songs. And a little Vaughan Williams concerto, a Capuzzi concerto that was originally written for double bass, and a piece by Ravel, Pavane for a Dead Princess. And then we'll liven things up with Fritz Kreisler, a little Liebesfreud, Fritz Kreisler. The last selection's an Arban variation.
You know, as you're talking, I was thinking, because earlier Harvey mentioned the fact that I had a singing voice, and perhaps before we take our break, just a word from Harvey and Arnold about that theme. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean the lyricism of the instrument. And, of course, the no basso or baritone could ever have the range that the instrument has. No, they can't sing as low as we play. They can't sing as high as we play. And this is a great discovery for a lot of composers today, because they're utilizing the complete range. And, for example, the second movement of the great Ralph Vaughan Williams tuba concerto, the Romanza movement, gives the tuba a chance to sing like any operatic voice would hope to sing.
Arnold, you going to add that?
I think it's very important that the tuba sing, because it's a reflection of the thoughts of the player. Mm. And singing is extremely important. It provides stimuli in the brain for reflexes in the embouchure and your tissues. And the more you sing in the head, the better chance you have of playing great tuba.
We'll take our break now and ask more about that, and also the tuba in different societies, too, after this break. And then we're resuming with our four guests here in the big studio. The subject is the tuba and classical repertoire, though we're hearing Yuba also. Arnold Jacobs and Harvey Phillips and Fritz Kainzig and Richard Frazier. We'd heard one Yuba. Now we've got Bill Bell. How will this differ, or should we hear it first?
This recording, I believe, was made in 1951, perhaps. And it was for a program that Stokowski had put together to especially entertain children. And Bill Bell was in a state of shock when he got a call from Leopold Stokowski asking him if he would please perform this. Yuba plays the rumba on the tuba with the orchestra for the children. And I think you'll hear a grand performance.
I want to tell you a secret about Mr. Bell. He sings a lovely little song. It's called When Yuba Plays the Rumba on the Tuba Down in Cuba. Let's see if we can persuade him to sing it now. Thank you.
tuba to play the rumble on the tuba down in Cuba. Oh, and his apple fell an apple, but the chap would rather grapple with his oompa oompa oompa. They refer to the tuba tuba tuba. They love the rumble on the tuba down in Cuba. It doesn't take it very long to get a tumble, where all the rumble lovers go to the rumble. Oh, how I'd like to be his double, for without a bit of trouble with his own oompa, he can knock his devastating for a loop. They love the rumble on the tuba down in Cuba. He's not a green horn, he plays a mean horn, a must be seen horn. Oh, he's a whiz. Why, all the men are not as funny looking boomer who plays the rumble on the tuba down in Cuba. I can't believe it, but they tell us every boomer friend is jealous of his oompa oompa oompa. They prefer to do the oompa oompa. They love the rumble on the tuba down in Cuba. They love his oompa 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 oompa.
Virtuoso, influenced so many other tuba players, was singing here. Do you guys sing, too?
Oh, I think every tuba player sings. Yeah. Arnold Jacobs has a beautiful voice.
Many years, yes. I was offered a scholarship at the Curtis Institute in the vocal department after being there 6 years as an instrumentalist. And I did sing for quite a number of years, and I still teach a certain amount of singing. I only teach resonance and respiration, but not literature, not repertoire. Yeah. But I still work with it quite a bit.
You going to add to that?
I studied singing just a little bit. One little interesting item, one of my former students decided not to play the tuba anymore, but went into singing full time. He's over in London now, and his teacher over there said, my, you breathe so beautifully. I guess we don't need to work on breathing at all. And that's certainly one thing a tuba player needs to do very well is breathe. And I think vocalists are surprised at just how well we know how to, the whole respiratory function works.
You know, I think before we hear Arnold Jacobs playing celebrated Beelzebub, before that, though, one question in my mind, when I hear a jazz band, what's a jazz band playing? I see a tuba, the bass replaced by the bass, and very often the tuba player plays the bass. And I'm always attracted by that and bewildered by it. Explain that, Harvey.
Well, in the early 30s, just as the instrument was being converted from a dance band instrument to a orchestral instrument, let's say, more of a solo instrument. Tuba players and bass players both started to double on one another's instrument in order to give themselves more job opportunities, obviously. Arnold Jacobs is a supreme bass player, as a matter of fact, in addition to being a great tubist. This was... of that period. I think by the time the 50s came along, the demands of the literature and the orchestral demands of the tubists were such that there were fewer and fewer doubling taking place.
Well, a word about Beelzebub, Arnold. We're going to hear the recording of that.
Well, actually, it's a rather light work, and it was requested by Colonel Sandelman, at that time the conductor of the Marine Band in Washington, and this was in Gunnison, Colorado, where I performed this. And I had worked it up as an encore piece when I would do a recital, or if I gave a solo that had more musical value. But it's a rather interesting light work, and it starts off with "Give my regards to Broadway." I think that there are several other versions of that little melody, but it's a nice light piece. I think you'll enjoy it.
Thank you.
Take our second break. I want to ask about tubas of high sound after this break. Resuming with our four tuba virtuosi, Arnold Jacobs, who's a principal tuba of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, and Harvey Phillips, who's professor of tuba at Indiana University in Bloomington, and Fritz Kinzig and Richard Fraser, tuba players here. Fritz with the Grant Park Orchestra and teaching at University of Illinois. And Richard Fraser, who's the Chicago Chamber Brass, whose concert tomorrow night is called the Effervescent Tuba, an all variety of music at Elmhurst College at 8. Before we Vaughan Williams, you tell me, Richard, that the tuba has all sorts of voices. I always associate tuba with a deep, deep bass voice.
The tuba is an instrument that, because of its recent development, really, it means something different in every country, the word tuba. It seems like in France, if you say the word tuba, you're speaking about a small instrument in C that has six vowels that can go quite low, the instrument that Ravel wrote the solo for, the Biglo solo in Pictures of at an Exhibition, and or rather not, he wrote it for it, didn't write it for it, but he orchestrated it for the tuba. And there's this type of a tuba that would be more like our euphonium, and then there would be, which would be sort of a soprano tuba, you could think of that. And then down to the F tuba, which is was the instrument in the 19th century that was in the orchestras of Europe at the time the great romantic composers were writing. And then Richard Wagner, in his Ring Cycle, thought about having an even lower sound, so he incorporated more of a band type tuba, one that was used in the bands, a larger tuba with a deeper sound in B flat, which gave him the sounds that he wanted for the mysterious parts like the Fastener tuba solo in the Ring Cycle. And so we have all of these different kinds of tuba sounds and different configurations of the tuba. So sometimes the layman is quite bewildered.
Yeah. You know, Harvey Phillips says he's looking around for a castrati tuba.
Well, you know, the tuba is very close to the horn and the cornet and the euphonium, because we're all conical bore, the brass instrument family being divided into two distinct categories, the cylindrical bore, which is the trumpet and the trombone and get very brilliant sounds, and the conical bore, which is a cone shape and gets larger towards the bell as it goes from the lead pipe. This gives those instruments a very mellow quality, and the tuba in its upper range is very much like the French horn. And this confuses a lot of symphonic listeners, I think, because they hear a tubist play something like a Biglo solo in Pictures of an Exhibition, which Richard mentioned earlier. And they say, oh, listen to that horn. Isn't that beautiful? Or they'll hear some of the Berlioz works, which were written originally for Orphocleide, but the tuba inherited those wonderful parts. And they say, oh, listen to that horn. Well, We say, and I think with some justification, that the tuba family, the bass tuba is the orchestral tuba. The tenor tuba is the euphonium baritone, which is an octave higher. The alto tuba is sometimes known as the French horn or the horn. The contralto tuba is the flugelhorn. And the soprano tuba is the cornet.
Mm.
And it disturbs some of our cornet friends when we call it the castrati tuba. But it is at the highest of the tuba family.
Now we're going to come, we've been going along and think about the classic composers for the tuba. Here's Vaughan Williams and Arnold Jacobs going to play. A word about this part before we hear it, Arnold.
Well, of course, this was written for Philip Catalinet in London. And it was played on a very small tuba of that time, an Imperial Boozy F tuba. And in this recording, just to keep to some legitimacy to it, I did play it on a very small F tuba. And it's a very interesting work for tuba, but I think there have been others that have been written since that I would like to sink my teeth into also. But this, I think, was the starter of the concertos. It's worth hearing.
Discovered that Harvey Phillips flew in from Bloomington just for this appearance here on this program to encourage tuba players.
He's helped all tuba players. For many years, he has been the prime force behind the organization, TUBA, Tubas Universal Brotherhood Association. And not only that, but all of the other...
Is that what it's called? The Tuba Universal Brotherhood Association?
Yes. it's like a guild or like a professional organization. And we saw quite some time ago that basically the tuba does not have a great image in the mind of the public. And a lot of people have a lot of misconceptions about the tuba and its possibilities. Too many times when people think of the tuba, they, in their mind, the first thing that comes is the limitations.
Well,
rather
then that
than
comes
the possibilities.
Is Louis Hungry Five.
Yeah.
Remember,
well, but,
or the Six Fat Dutchman.
So we've tried to promote the tuba, and the greatest promoter of the tuba has been Harvey Phillips, and this is just an example of the way that he just drops anything to help us all in our image.
We also know that Harvey has to catch that plane back to Bloomington, yeah. So we're going to hear Harvey now, aren't we? What is this piece of Two Moods?
In 1960, Donald Swann, who had a two-man comedy act with Flanders, Swann and Flanders, was playing New York, and he called me and introduced himself on the phone and asked me if I would come and read through a work that had been commissioned by Gerd Hoffnung of the famed Hoffnung Festivals. And this was to be a work of two funny movements. So we read through it, and I liked it very much, and I said, do you have a publisher for it? And he said, no. I said, well, I have a publishing company. We'd like to publish this piece. About a week later, he called me and with the sad news that Gerd Hoffnung had passed away. And in the meantime, we had made plans to record the work. So I said, why don't we change the first movement and make it serious, make it an elegy for Gerd Hoffnung. And then the second movement is a scherzo where we never seem to find the key we want to be in.
And now we have two moves at Donald Swann, Harvey Phillips.
Thank you.
Phillips doing the Donald Swann's Two Worlds. We'll take one more break. We're here with Arnold Jacobs, the dean of American, well, certainly tuba players around and about, and the principal tuba man at the Chicago Symphony. And Harvey Phillips just had to leave to catch that plane teaching at Indiana University. We just heard him. Fritz Kanzig, who is the teacher at University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana, of course, and he's the principal tuba at the Grand Park Orchestra, and Richard Frazier, who's tuba Chicago Chamber Brass, we've heard, whose recital is tomorrow night. It should be a very, very entertaining one, too, and informative, but one in which you play the tuba. This is at Elmhurst College tomorrow night at 8, and you'll be playing everything from Ravel to Mozart to Beethoven, Vaughan Williams, all on the tuba.
Yes.
And we'll take our last break, and then we've got to hear Charlie Parker. A Charlie Parker piece of Fritz Kanzig and Richard Frazier after this message. You mentioned Charlie Parker.
This group is the New York Tuba Quartet. And these guys got together. And I believe it's Toby Hanks and Steve Johns and John Stevens and Sam Salafian. And they're doing a little bit of Charlie Parker called A Prevoir.
But who is this Simone Montilla?
He was an old baritone player. Do we have time to hear a little Simone Montilla?
If it is just a brief touch of baritone sax, and then we'll hear a Charlie Parker.
Performance was in 1909.
That's fine.
Simone Montilla.
Yeah. But now let's hear the Charlie
Parker. Now we're going to look into some new directions with Charlie Parker in the New York, played by the New York Tuba Quartet. Thank you.
Down in Cuba.